Welcome to the Future of Political Consulting by the AAPC, where we explore the evolving landscape of political consulting in a rapidly changing world. The AAPC is a bipartisan membership organization that represents professionals working in the political consulting industry. Our host today is Kyle Walderslager, the Executive Vice President of Operations at New Blue Interactive. Joining him today is Dario Gracera, the CEO of Direct Persuasion, and together they will discuss the importance of training your team for the future. Kyle, take it away.
Thank you. So I just want to start off with Daria. What did the idea to hold a hackathon for your team come from?
Yeah, thank you. I'm really pumped to be here. So I posted on LinkedIn that I did a hackathon with members of my team at Direct Persuasion, and I got a lot of DMs, I got a lot of comments, and I got a lot of people just individually emailing me saying, this is such a good idea. I want to do this with my team. DP is no stranger to activities. My team always calls them activities. I've been doing them since 2020. I noticed in 2020 when I was doing one-on-ones with my team, I was giving them such awesome opportunity to become masters at a domain that they owned. They were getting, you know, fast-paced environment. They were getting a ton of mentorship, ton of cross-team collaboration. I was inviting them to client meetings wherever I could. But one thing they always noted was a lack of public speaking opportunities and that they were really in the weeds all day and they were, you know, in ad platforms and in Excel spreadsheets, trying to master and hit goals, but they weren't given an opportunity to practice and be able to communicate what they were working on a public stage. So I started these activities mostly as a way to give them a way to kind of become teachers and get really comfortable explaining concepts. I knew also, like with junior staff, for them to graduate to the next level and start managing clients or start doing pitches, they needed those public speaking skills. So mostly the activities were born from that. They've taken various shapes and sizes over the years. 2 years ago, right before Christmas, we did something called 10%. Google does like a rule where I think 20% of their staff can work on something else all day. And our Google reps were actually talking to me about it and what they wanted to spend their 20% on, or that they were getting others from other fields doing 20% on election work. And I was like, oh, that would be so cool. We're a startup. So 20% is a little unrealistic versus a trillion-dollar empire like Google, but I could do 10%. You know, it translates roughly to like an hour or two a day, and they could just, you know, spend time building something or working on something. So everyone came up with a product that they wanted to sell. The challenge for that is I wanted people on my team to think less in client services and think more in terms of building proprietary product at Direct Persuasion. We had a lot of like half-baked ideas or a lot of intellectual property, but not anything worth value. And so we did that, and I actually brought in a panel of judges who are called our investors, and the investors were willing to actually throw in money for the winning product. So the hackathon was kind of evolution two from that, where everyone built like concepts and pitch decks for products that we would actively use and how much money we could get for them. But now with AI, the concept of like vibe coding is a really big thing. And so I was realizing we could actually build a lot of these products. And the funding that the investors were willing to do were for dev talent to build and us as strategists to sit on top and sell and use. Now we don't really need dev and we don't need funding. And really the only people standing in the way are ourselves. And so I wanted to challenge and kind of bridge the two together where you guys are full of amazing ideas. And that exercise, the 10%, was so awesome to see like the connect of turning like day-to-day work into like, oh, we can automate this and we can build a product and other people would also use this product, into like, okay, I'm going to build the product and now I'm going to stress test it and use it. And now instead of just a sales pitch, I'm going to do a product demo. And so that's where the hackathon was born. I was noticing as well that a lot of staff were using AI in very superficial ways. So they're using ChatGPT to like help them with copywriting, or if they were having trouble on an ads platform and needed, you know, a workaround or a help guide, it was a lot faster, you know, diagnosing an issue and troubleshooting it over AI than it was anywhere else. And so that was a way to bring not only like, okay, we have these product ideas, now let's go build it. Now go use AI for real and like in a relevant way.
So kind of giving them training wheels before getting into the breath, the huge world of AI. I think that's super helpful to like, they're like, hey, this is good. This is going to help you out a lot, but let's give you some scaffolding before that starts.
enforce it. It's like the concept of homework. Like you're, you need to practice things before you're good at it. And you need to like figure out what you're bad at. And so this was like a forced activity to make you use AI. Otherwise, you'll say you'll do it, but work will get in the way, or you're doing it, but you're not doing it effectively. And this was like a real way to ensure you had to stress test AI.
Absolutely. And with that, how did the structure of the hackathon, how did you structure it to ensure it was a productive and benefited the whole and overall team?
Yeah, great question. We played into people's strengths. So at first, I talked about it with leadership on just like a free-for-all. That's how I did the 10% projects, where it's just like, find a problem and go solve it. That method needs a lot of coaching, especially with younger staff. So I decided to kind of look at what the staff are doing every single day. And I've done almost every job on this company. So I know from doing it what I got annoyed at every day, and what I know with now my experience, what can be streamlined or like time saved with tech. And so I went through everyone's like majority of what they do and their core responsibilities for the company. And I kind of started with a prompt. I had other people on the team like sign off on people's prompts, just so I wasn't, you know, the only cook in the kitchen here. And and I just was like, you do this all day. This takes really long. We can't scale to this because of it. Build a tool that will solve these problems. And some people's had like 10 bullets under it. Or some people's was, I want to start here, but I want you to take it to the next level. Like, this is very basic and shouldn't take you long to build. So what are you going to do after it? And then for some people, it was like, build this for DP only. Like, this is solving our company's problems. For other people, it was like, you know, other agencies deal with this. So how would you build it so that any agency can use it? Or we want all of our clients to use this, not just this one. So how will you build it for all clients? So definitely a lot of prompting and coaching. What I learned from other activities that we've done is that you also do need check-ins. Like with any big project, you can't just have a looming due date very far in advance, because people will, you know, procrastinate and wait too long.
Absolutely. So,
we had two check-ins halfway through, or the first one was a few weeks in, and I had a member of my team start going through and coaching. She's like an AI pro, Daniela, on my team. And so I wanted her to get in quickly before too much work was done, but I also wanted deliverables being done by that date so that she could check some stuff. And then there was one more check-in, I think a week or two before they presented it, where I got to see it and give feedback. And I think one other member of the team who was like deep in AI at that point also got to see it, which was great accountability.
Speaking of accountability and kind of results, what was the most unexpected success or innovation that came out of the hackathon? And also, what was there a tangible impact on your business or client's campaign?
Ooh, yeah. So the unexpected success that happened, I would say, is that the people I thought would be least into it and the least quick to adopt on either the AI front or just new technology replacing their day-to-day were actually the ones kind of loving it and embracing it. And I was very impressed by some newer staff and what they were able to turn out and do. I would say another unexpected success is that because this was delegated out, like the concept that was in my brain is very like, very top level, very like, what can I sell? Very, what can I like brag about? And when you're having the doers build, the people who are like living in it every single day, they're going to come at it with such a different lens.
Absolutely.
That's actually more productive than me building it. And it like shows politics. We don't really deal with this because we don't have very sophisticated product teams, but there tends to be a disconnect. A lot of the tools that we use, like the people building the text platforms, are not the ones who have run massive texting operations. They're builders. The people building the donation platforms haven't ran a fundraising operation in a long time. And so there is a disconnect between the products we use every day and then the customers who build it. So like flipping that model on like the customers being the builders, I was blown away, and they thought of things I never thought of because I'm very detached at this point. And so that was like a word to the wise of the political technologies we use, is that too often product teams and builders are like way too distant and are not in the thick of it. And they do their best with calls and discoveries and getting close to clients. But when you're in it every single day, you're going to think of things different. And then the tangible impact on the business, it's still a work in progress, like bringing everything in. We're building like a massive portal of all the tools that we build, streamline all business, but it sped that up. I mean, we were thinking originally this was going to take end of year or beginning of next year to have all rolled out because like three of us were going to work on it in our spare time. And this made a build out take 2 months instead. And so the staff costs, the time savings, I mean, democratizing the build is the smartest thing for a startup founder to do.
Absolutely.
And get key people bought in was really fun too.
Yeah, I think I would compare that also on a general level to when movies are coming out and like TV shows are happening. You really want the people who are going to be watching these said things to give their input before you're giving out to the mainstream. You want to find out exactly the people who are going to be the commercializing of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, totally.
So I wanted to throw out some questions for both of us. First, one of the questions are, what are the most immediate risks for organizations that aren't proactively training their staff for these new technological realities? And I figured I'd start that one myself. I think it's proverbial fishing without a net. It's in today's rapidly evolving technological landscape, it's akin to operating a business or organization without embracing the crucial role of technology. I firmly believe that the staff meetings, which you kind of were talking about earlier, should always include dedicated segments for technology updates, even if these updates are as simple as ensuring everyone has updated their mobile phones to the latest operating system. These technology updates shouldn't be a burden or a deviation from the core business discussions, but rather an essential investment in productivity, security, and efficiency. And by regularly reviewing and implementing technology advancements, organizations can enhance efficiency, boost collaboration, improve security, stay competitive with other companies, and then also as customers, new customers, and then foster a culture of learning that's more dedicated to technology update segments and staff meetings and encourage a continuous learning environment. Because that's what you really want to do, is you want to keep it fresh for people so they're not feeling like they're in a classroom, which I think goes also to what you were saying earlier. It provides a platform for team members to share knowledge, troubleshoot issues, and discover new ways to leverage technology in their own roles. Also, and finally, address and resolve issues proactively. So you're not having those issues that happened a month ago or 2 months ago because they were minor issues. You're actually trying to get those issues now. So having those regular check-ins to allow for early identification of technical challenges or inefficiencies. This proactive approach can prevent minor issues from escalating into significant problems that disrupt operations. So therefore, as a reminder, to update those phone software, a demonstration of a new productivity tool, or a discussion about upcoming technological integrations, making technology updates a standing agenda in staff meetings is not just a good practice, it's strategically imperative for a forward-thinking organization.
For sure. I think politics, we have a lot working against us. The cyclical nature is bad in terms of business. You have the hire and fire. We have a lack of real talent density on the technical side of things. But we're an industry that can move fast, learn fast, and adopt quickly. And so it's not like we're in finance and, you know, there's all these regulations or, you know, various other industries that have to deal with a lot of red tape. We don't have much red tape in politics. The red tape is ourselves and our clients. And so we should you know, take advantage of that. Like we are at the forefront. The industry I always compare from like a performance marketing side of things and advertising side of things is Hollywood. Like I would say I'm really only jealous of them because they have elections every month with like movie premieres or television show releases. Where they have to hit goals and numbers, and they have like this binary result that's either like, yes, this movie did well, or no, this movie didn't, or TV series or whatever. We do too. But like a lot of innovation has happened in Hollywood, and they're the biggest ad spenders. A lot of the case studies as us political advertisers get are from the entertainment industry, from these big tech platforms. And so like we are lucky that we have this like speed. We have these binary results that tell us if like what we did was good or bad. We have fundraising that we can test on that we'll know right away if it's good or bad. And so we are in a really cool industry to innovate. And so we all have to take advantage of it. And it like comes from us and like consultants who are at the front lines who have a lot of work to do, where we can decide what platforms we want to use and innovate.
Yeah, I think it, going back to what you were saying earlier, as far as when you're kind of in the weeds and you're the person doing all of the, looking at all these numbers, I think it's really important to take that step back and really assess what you're seeing. And that can direct you in different ways. And being more specific, just not looking at it as bare bones. So even as something as payroll, you know, not getting so blurred out by something like that, you can be helpful to an employee if you're seeing their hours, if an intern's hours are higher than they were before, using that directive as, how are you doing? You know, you can use numbers and objectives and change them and pivot, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah. On that note, my question for you, how do you balance the immediate needs of the day-to-day operations with the resource and time-intensive goals of future-proofing the team? And so not getting bogged down in like all the deliverables and that there's always more work to be done, but like there's this side stuff that will drive the team forward.
Absolutely. The consistency should be extend to having a leveled up meetings, meaning distinct gatherings tailored to junior, senior and executive levels. So those are completely different work experiences, as you also mentioned earlier. This structured approach allows for more focused discussions where information can be shared and decisions can be made at the appropriate strategic or operational depth of each group. Because I think what happens a lot of times, even in the staff meetings, you'll have your executive level person speak in executive level. Or it just might be difficult to speak to each person on each level and really get your point across. Say that there's a new sexual harassment thing that you want to roll out. That means so much more for a person who might only be around for, say, their fall semester versus a person who is a senior level person who has been there for maybe 5 to 7 years. So you really should be tailoring your message to each person and really kind of going, it can go even further by person. I think sometimes people don't like to be in meetings. They feel put on the spot, and they're also note-taking can be changed. So I think that we have to really tailor to as much as possible, because you can have thousands of employees, but really trying to make sure you're a person to person and then also a level to level.
That's great. I think it is up to leadership to really instill this, though. I've always taken it upon myself at Direct Persuasion to be the one to like spearhead these and get as much buy-in as possible. I've like upped the stakes by having a panel of judges or offering vacation days for the winner, or, you know, cash bonuses on the spot for our winners, so that people are bought in and excited. On performance marketing side, you get a very competitive crop of talent. And so like playing into your team's strengths, for creatives, competition is like not at all what motivates them. So I would, you know, manage creatives and do future proofing in a very different way. But what's helped me as a leader as well, like instilling this from top down, is finding who in the team just naturally likes this and like sends articles or sends blogs or just does this on their own without being asked, and like bring them up and have them champion this with you, because they'll get a boost of confidence. You're playing into their strengths. They should they should be leading this. And it doesn't matter what level they are. Like if that's their skill set, like that needs to be highlighted and showcased. And like people do this on their own. And so like identifying those people and being like, all right, what am I missing out on? What do I not understand? I've had to tap into a lot of staffers at Direct Persuasion who are just ahead of this on me. And then, you know, they'll arm me with like, all right, we all need to be doing this. No one's doing this. So then I can think, okay, how do we do this as a company? How do we do this as a team and drive each other forward?
Absolutely. And then beyond hackathon, what other methodologies have you found effective for team training in this new digital landscape? And any formal workshops or online courses that you've kind of found out about?
If staff want to go do workshops, we'll always approve that. It might actually be in our benefits at this point. But I will say, shout out to AAPC. This was Direct Persuasion's first time submitting awards. We've been around since 2017, but we've never submitted awards before for any of the conferences. And having to get our entrance, like, you know, our like submissions all organized in terms of like case studies and impact for the Polys and various other awards, like that has been such a good exercise for us because the team now thinks in case studies. And it's like, okay, you can do all the tasks all day long, but is it special? Is it moving the needle? Is it going to get us recognition? Like, are we doing anything different? And so we'll like, team will share stuff now and people will respond back in Slack like, oh, that's Polly's worthy. Or like, oh, we should submit that. Make a note that like, we got to submit that downfield. Or like, oh, this could be a Polly's submission. And so what do we need to do to get that ready by end of year? So I think thinking in case studies and like framing that narrative and challenging a few people on your team who think like that to kind of own that and to always be looking out for it has been helpful for us to kind of drive the company forward.
And that ties into what you were saying earlier about what competition looks like. Because I think that, you know, as we're growing in different segments of our lifetime and work lifetime, things have changed. And I don't think that putting your nose to the grindstone handle it has that same weight. So I think that it goes to your point of we have kind of this goal to go after, not this superficial goal about being the best. But this actual goal of an award, it's like we're a team, and it's not that kind of generic we're a team, because I think that it's really important not to give those just buzzwords, but really providing a tangible goal-oriented thing and not just throwing money, because sometimes a team or an organization doesn't have the money. So to have an award that will represent an entire company is something that they can look forward to.
Exactly. On that note, how do you create a culture where continuous learning is embraced by employees, not just another corporate mandate or your boss making you do something else?
Absolutely. So kind of really touched on that, but like leadership and leadership commitment is super important. And what I mean by that is actually have leaders that must lead by examples and are open to share their learning experiences and their learning journeys. So not forgetting, because we're all so guilty of that. You get to a point where you're at another level and you forget about how you were on that first level because you've done so many things. I don't even think it's something of not remembering, but I think you were working so hard and you're growing and evolving that you forget about what those introductory thoughts were, those thoughts of, I really have to do better than what my brain is even capable of doing. It's also learning conducive environments. And I talked about this earlier, making sure those meetings you're having are not just staff meetings, but they're not just intro level meetings or mid-level meetings or executive level meetings. Having those one-on-ones or even having leaders that are on that level, having peri leaders being able to speak with the people who are under. So you can have that, oh, I know where you're at because I'm right here too. Tailored learning experiences. So you're not just having the same meeting after week after week after week, really kind of changing it. Having retreats as well. And in this learning environment that we have, a lot of time we are only on the computer. So making sure those retreats are more segmented and not just everybody being in one space. And also recognition, reward, and reinforcement. And we talked about this with earlier when it comes to promotions, bonuses, but also when you don't have financial reinforcements, making sure that that comes in through rewards. And then also when you're having those staff meetings, really talk about what those successes are, making sure that you're letting your team talk about what those successes are and not having it be so performative, actually being real celebrations of each other. And your employees can feel it. They can feel when you're just kind of putting on airs or when you're actually being excited about what growth looks like in a company. And finally, having an iterative improvement, normalizing failure as a learning opportunity, continuously gathering feedback on training programs and measure their impact to refine strategies. To cultivate a thriving learning culture, organizations should adhere to key principles.
Totally agree. Where I've messed up on this is it was perceived as like meetings for the sake of meetings, or it's like detached. She's like not realizing how stressed and busy we are. And she just wants to do these like fluffy meetings. And obviously that was like never the intention. I executed it poorly. Like the intention was good, but the execution made them feel like that. And so that was on me to fix. So what I realized is like the activities or like the learning opportunities should not be looked at as like passive or fluffy or like, you know, a lot of them quickly. What has worked for me is like doing long-term. So you have like a few months to do it or you have a few weeks. And then at the end of it, there's something tangible. On your note of failure, totally as well, what we've incorporated is feedback. So I was noticing people would give their presentation and then they started working or they were like kind of zoned out. Everyone has to give feedback to everyone during their submission. I did one activity where it was group projects and you could see the frustration with people that like work styles are very different. And when you're under the clock, you don't want to be reflected poorly because someone on your team has a very different style than you and you guys couldn't work together on it because on a day-to-day, they're not working together on something. So it doesn't really matter. And so I started doing more individual projects rather than group so that individual people could shine and kind of own the process by themselves. And so it's a work in progress and you have to do it for your team, but you just got to get started because you're not going to be able to optimize unless you have that feedback coming through to your team. But always make the intention known. Like, I am doing this exercise with you all because I am noticing this and I want to fix this so that they can get bought in and they trust you and they know why you're doing this.
Absolutely. And how has your approach to hiring changed in the last couple of years? What new skills are you actively looking for?
Yeah, I don't think this has changed, but I definitely own it loud and proud now is that I like to hire young and cultivate them. I don't like to hire people with bad habits. I think about marketing pretty differently and the company thinks about marketing pretty differently. We do things a lot differently than other teams in terms of like tracking and measurement. And so I've often found that I'll hire really smart, driven, soft skills are like great, or they've done marketing for a while and their hard skills are not at all where we need them to be. And they, you know, they might have 5 years of experience, but their hard skills kind of match 1 year of DP experience. So I've definitely leaned in and owned hiring young and training up. But with AI, we used to have a three-pronged test. We had math, media, Excel. The media was definitely not ChatGPT proofed. And the Excel was definitely hard to just Google. Now it would be a lot easier with ChatGPT too. So we've really changed up our testing that we do for potential new hires where it is as much as we can, like they cannot use AI for it. That way we can weed out like problem solvers and thinkers. Not that we don't want them to use AI. We just don't want to have a cookie cutter test that everyone can ace with the help of ChatGPT. We want to see how their brains work a little bit.
They're not being themselves. So you want to hire the person you're actually trying to hire. I think also being really transparent about what your company values are really important from the outset. I think that you don't have to necessarily give all your cards out, but having a person know exactly what they're getting themselves into as far as values are concerned is really important. I think this level of communication extends beyond the initial interview stages. So continuing through the onboarding process throughout an employee's tenure as well. By consistently reinforcing these values, you can cultivate an environment where the employees feel a strong sense of purpose and belonging, and ultimately contributing to a higher retention rate. Because I think that we can present in one way, and then when people are kind of getting into the fold, it's almost like you're selling a car with a bad battery. Just don't want to do that. You really want to be truthful about what the car looks like. And I think that will help, especially in this type of society that we have going on here. I want to move on to the next question. Can you compare the benefits of recruiting someone who is already knowing the specific tools you've used versus someone with a proven ability to learn and adapt quickly?
Yeah, I think about this in terms of like ad technology, reporting tools, but now also AI tools. It's definitely not a mandate. I mean, it's helpful hiring someone with the knowledge, but like the application of that knowledge looks so different from team to team and manager to manager. So it's not something I'll like immediately vet for or care about. Also, with like emerging technology, that means the organization's like goalpost is constantly moving. We've tested out like 5 different AI platforms, 6 different AI platforms, and then like half a dozen AI creative platforms in the last 12 months. And we're going to continue to test. And so like narrowing our application pool by like, oh, you're very familiar with Claude. Well, like we're using Claude right now, but who knows if we're going to be using Claude in 6 months from now with how quickly this technology is moving. And so I care more about personality, eagerness, and like willingness to roll with the punches when the goalpost changes or technology changes. That's more of like a personality and a skill set versus like an experience with a specific tool. What about you?
Absolutely. So in the realm of hiring, I think it's crucial to acknowledge that 2 seemingly contrasting needs can be both significant, hold significant importance. With a foundational understanding of the role's basic knowledge is undeniably valuable, but also equal emphasis should be placed on providing interviewees with the opportunity to articulate how they might adapt. So what I mean by that is, you can, when you were talking earlier about those soft skills, you want to give the person the opportunity to say, well, I might not have this, but this is how I can pivot. And that kind of gets away from the AI-ness of it all, because you're absolutely marketing yourself. You're talking about what you can do. So I think that as employees and prospective employees, people need to realize and really like bank on themselves and be able to look at not only what is being asked of them for their start, but what is going to be what they can deliver for their future.
Completely agree. So on that note, what are some of the key indicators or questions that you guys use during the interview process to gauge a candidate's aptability, trainability?
Absolutely. Our hiring process begins with a practical assessment. We present a prospective hire with a series of real-world scenarios, asking them, what would you do if this situation happened? This approach is rooted in our belief that while foundational knowledge is essential, true professional compatibility is demonstrated through the application of that knowledge in dynamic, unpredictable situations. It allows us to gauge not only their theoretical understanding, but also their problem-solving skills, critical thinking, and then the ability to adapt. This method complements our initial evaluations of basic knowledge and providing a comprehensive understanding of a candidate's potential to contribute effectively to our team. So it's basically a reiteration of what I was talking about in the last question.
Nice. We do something very similar. I would say 2 questions that always make candidates kind of stop in their tracks, but their answers are very telling on like the type of environment that they thrive in. It's something along the lines of like, what has been, who's the worst manager you ever had? Or like, what was the worst job you ever had and why? Like, tell us why you hated it. And who is the best manager you've ever had? You don't need to name names, but like which job and why was it the best job? Or what was your best day of work ever? To kind of understand like what motivates them day to day, because they can say a lot of things, but when they have to tell a story, you can pick up on what they're really saying a lot easier. So yeah, that's been our like key. That's when I join an interview, those are the questions I ask. And I can pretty much tell from the person if they're going to be a good fit or not.
Absolutely. I think that people really need to learn into what a good conversation looks like. I mean, yeah. Even right now, we're having a great informative conversation. I think that translates also into interviewing. I think that we, you know, skills are important and you need to know, you need to have someone who can actually do the job. But there is something about an environment and a work environment, and you know what your work environment is being an interviewer. So you need to lean into that and being able to give really clear, concise responses to what a person's questions are, and then giving actual questions that will fit them when they actually get into the work environment. So there's not a lot of confusion or catastrophic thoughts.
100%. Culture fit is so, it's the most important thing, honestly. You can teach a lot when you're bringing in someone, and people are adaptable for the most part. But like culture and having multiple people do that culture check is crucial at our company.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time. This was a wonderful and I think really an informative conversation.
Thank you. Thank you, AAPC.
That was our chat with Kyle and Daria. Be sure not to miss an episode. Subscribe to The Future of Political Consulting by the AAPC on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And join the conversation by following us on social media at the AAPC. Thanks for listening.